Usually, when you look at a painting in a pristine gallery, it feels like, magic.
Oh, absolutely. It looks completely effortless.
Right, like it just sprang fully formed from a genius's brain directly onto the canvas. But today, we are totally shattering that illusion.
We really are.
So, welcome to this deep dive. Our mission today is to decode the fascinating creative struggle and the deep philosophical underpinnings behind a truly stunning contemporary watercolor painting. It's titled Nereus by the artist Jairo Duque.
And what makes this exploration so rare for you listening is that we are completely bypassing that polished gallery experience.
Yeah, we're going behind the scenes.
Exactly. We are diving into a real treasure trove of primary source material, which is the artist's own meticulous personal notes.
Which is such a privilege to
It
read.
really is. I mean, art is usually presented as a closed, finished product. But here, we essentially have the intellectual instruction manual detailing every single brush stroke, his specific material choices, and most crucially, every moment of raw self-doubt.
I am incredibly enthusiastic about this because the inspiration for this piece, which depicts a pelican landing on the water at sunset, it didn't happen on some majestic jagged cliff over the Mediterranean.
No, not at all.
The spark actually came from the artist's routine Sunday walks on the beaches of Southern California.
Right, places like Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, Seal Beach.
Yeah, exactly.
He is out there walking among the tourists, the surfers, the everyday chaos of modern life, and he's just capturing this fleeting real-world moment under the Pacific
Just
lights.
a normal Sunday.
Right. And then he takes that ephemeral mental snapshot back to his studio in Whittier, California, to process it. It is a profoundly grounded starting point for, the massive mythical leap he is about to make.
Okay, let's unpack this because if you want to understand the soul of this painting, you really have to look at its literal
Our
skeleton.
materials.
Yes, the materials. In his notes, Duke specifies exactly what he is painting on. He uses Arches watercolor paper, 640 grams, cold pressed with a coarse grain.
Very specific.
Super specific. And to a layperson, paper is just paper. But 640 gram paper is wildly thick. I mean, it's incredibly heavy, dense, almost like thick cardboard.
Oh, it is an absolute beast of a material.
And my mind immediately goes to the contrast here because the subject he is painting is so incredibly delicate, right?
Yeah,
Like,
bird in flight, liquid water.
exactly. Liquid water, the fading light of day. Using 640 gram paper for this just feels, well, it feels disproportionate.
It really does.
It's like pouring the massive reinforced concrete foundation of a 100-story skyscraper just to hold up a tiny, fragile glass house. Like, why use something so brutally heady for something so delicate?
That is a great analogy, and that skyscraper foundation is physically necessary because water is a highly aggressive element.
Oh,
All
totally.
right, like in the unforgiving medium of watercolor, the paper is not just a passive bystander. To paint an ocean, to truly capture the essence of the sea, you have to load a massive amount of water onto the brush. You are essentially flooding the surface of the paper.
And if you, listening to this, have ever accidentally spilled a glass of water on a paperback book, you know exactly what happens
Oh
next.
yeah, it's ruined.
You just sit there and watch the pages dry into those rigid, wavy, distorted curves.
Right, and the Spanish term artists use for that exact thing is pandeo.
Pandeo.
Pandeo, yeah.
Yeah.
The cellulose fibers literally buckle under the moisture. They
Yeah.
warp into an accordion shape. Now imagine trying to paint a flat, calm, shimmering ocean on those wavy pages.
It wouldn't work at all.
Exactly. Puddles form in the newly created dips. The light hits the warped paper incorrectly, and the entire illusion of the glass house just shatters because the ground beneath it gave way.
So the 640 gram paper doesn't flinch.
Not at all.
It can actually withstand a heavy, sustained inundation of water without giving an inch. It maintains its structural integrity so that the delicate illusion of the water and the bird can, actually exist.
Which brings us to the texture, because
Yeah.
his notes also obsess over the paper being cold pressed with a coarse grain. So we are moving from the structural mechanics to the microscopic topography. The coarse grain creates this miniature, invisible landscape of tiny peaks and valleys across the entire surface of the paper.
Okay, let me see if I can deduce the physics here. Duke pairs this highly textured paper with Daniel Smith brand mineral pigments.
He does.
And those pigments are famous for being incredibly heavy, right? Because they are literally made of ground-up rocks and minerals.
Literally just pulverized rocks, yes.
So if he floods this microscopic mountain range with water mixed with these heavy pigments, well, gravity just takes over. The water evaporates, and those heavy mineral particles must sink straight down and settle perfectly into the tiny valleys of the paper's grain.
Leaving the microscopic peaks of the paper relatively bare.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the visual result of that specific chemical physics is profound. When natural light hits that textured, varied distribution of pigment, it creates a subtle optical vibration.
Not a vibration.
Your human eye instantly and subconsciously interprets that vibration as the authentic, shifting shimmer of real ocean water.
That is wild. It's not just drawing water. It's like leveraging gravity, microscopic texture, and heavy minerals to trick the eye into seeing the water actually move.
He essentially forces the physics of the materials to do the heavy lifting for him.
That is brilliant. So we have this incredibly heavy physical ocean established on the paper. But, you know, an ocean is really defined by what interacts with it.
Sure.
And that brings us to the subject landing on that water. In his notes, Duke states that the pelican in this painting is intended to represent Nereus, the ancient Greek god of the sea. And I am sorry, but I have to push back on this.
I don't blame you. The skepticism is completely warranted here.
Because when we think of a Greek sea god, our cultural imagination instantly conjures Poseidon.
Oh, absolutely. The trident, the beard.
Right. We picture this epic, destructive, titan-like figure. Massive muscles, stormy beard, holding a giant trident, sinking fleets out of pure wrath. That is what divine marine power looks like to us.
It is the standard archetype.
Exactly. And Jared Duca chooses a pelican. I mean, a bird that, if you've ever spent 10 minutes on a modern beach pier, you know, is basically a goofy, clumsy creature famous for waddling around trying to steal French fries from tourists.
They're definitely the beach bums of the bird world.
Right. So how can a fry-stealing beach bum of a bird possibly embody a divine ancient force?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's actually a brilliant tension the artist deliberately introduces. We really have to look past the Olympian drama we are conditioned to expect.
Okay, I'm listening.
In Greek mythology, Nereus is much older than Poseidon. He's known as the old man of the sea.
The old man of the sea.
Right. Nereus represents the primordial ocean from before it was personified by human-like rage and drama. He represents the ocean's tranquil, benevolent, and unalterable truth. His domain isn't storms, it's deep, quiet wisdom.
Oh, so he is the ocean as it actually is, not the ocean as human beings fear it to be.
Exactly. And when viewed through this specific lens, the pelican is just a masterstroke of subversion. Biologically, the pelican is an apex evolutionary survivor.
Oh, they've been around forever.
Tens of millions of years. It is a creature that has dominated the marine ecosystem virtually unchanged since the time of the dinosaurs. It possesses this ancient, silent mastery of its environment.
Wow. So by choosing the pelican to represent Nereus, the artist is making a really profound statement. Like, true ancient wisdom doesn't need to announce itself with lightning bolts and tridents.
Right, it doesn't need to be loud.
True power is persistent, and it very often hides entirely in the ordinary. It demands that we strip away our expectations of what divine looks like. Real majesty is just chilling right there in front of us, disguised as something completely mundane.
And the specific way he paints the bird reinforces that exact idea. He captures a very ephemeral pose. The notes describe the bird with its wings spread in this broad, almost ceremonial gesture, and its feet are just barely grazing the surface of the water.
It is the perfect synthesis between flight and stillness.
It really is.
The bird no longer fully belongs to the air, but it hasn't quite settled into the water yet either. It's a microsecond of total transition. And there's a fascinating detail about the reflection in the water underneath the bird. Duke purposely paints the reflection slightly distorted.
Right, it's not a mirror image at all.
It's not. To me, that feels like a striking visual metaphor for how ancient myths actually survive in our modern world.
Oh, because a myth like Nereus survives through millennia.
Mm.
But it is constantly passed down, translated, and reinterpreted.
Yes. It gets distorted by generations of human storytelling. It's never a perfect reflection of the original truth. But even with that distortion, the vibrating essence of the myth remains intact, right there on the surface of our culture.
That is a great way to read it. Mm-hmm. And what allows that distorted reflection to look so natural on the paper is the specific watercolor technique Duke employs. In his notes, he refers to his technique for painting the sea as relying on controlled accidents.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting because I've got to call a timeout here.
Oh.
Controlled accident sounds suspiciously like a massive oxymoron to me. To a skeptic, it sounds like a convenient excuse an artist uses when they accidentally spill way too much water on the canvas and decide to just say, yeah, I meant to do that. Controlled accident.
Right, I can see how it sounds like a cop-out.
If he's portraying the divine ancient order of a godlike Nereus, shouldn't his painting technique be rigorously mathematically precise? Why let accidents dictate the divine?
This brings us right back to the nature of the medium itself. Watercolor is governed by fluid dynamics. Water has surface tension. Pigments have different weights and densities.
Right.
When they hit the wet paper, they organically attract and repel each other. The materials actually have their own agency.
Right, great.
Which means if an artist comes in with a dictatorial mindset, trying to mathematically control every single edge, forcing the water to stay perfectly inside arbitrary lines, well, the painting suffocates.
Oh, I see. It loses its life. It stops being water and just becomes a stiff plastic picture of water.
Exactly. The true mastery in watercolor, and this really mirrors the true wisdom of the god Nereus, is the ability to rid oneself of ego.
Wow.
A master watercolorist sets up the optimal conditions, applies the pigment, and then steps back to let the physics of nature do its work.
Mm.
You cannot dictate how the sea behaves, not in real life, and not even on a piece of 640-gram paper. You have to collaborate with the chaos.
That is beautiful. So the controlled accident isn't a mistake, it's a surrender. It's the artist admitting that nature is a better painter than he is.
Yes. And he grounds all this philosophical weight with a very deliberate color palette, too. If you just painted everything in solemn, ancient, deep blues, the painting would feel unapproachable.
It would be too cold.
It would feel too heavy. Instead, he uses very specific warm, almost fiery tones in the sky and the beak of the pelican. Those warm accents act as an anchor. They balance the ancient, eternal blues by grounding the piece entirely in the warmth of the present fleeting moment.
That idea of the artist surrendering his ego to the water, it transitions so powerfully into the final section of his notes, where he surrenders his ego to the audience.
Which is incredibly rare.
It really is. This might be the most shocking part of the whole deep dive. The intense, vulnerable self-criticism. We need to set the stage for how successful this painting actually is. Nereus is a massive international success.
Oh, it really is.
It was exhibited at the prestigious Art Boxy in Palma, Spain in April of 2024. Furthermore, during a show in Los Angeles, the painting was acquired by the Colombian consul.
And that acquisition is a massive deal. It transforms the artwork from a private creative endeavor into an asset of high-level cultural diplomacy.
Wow, right.
When a consul acquires an artwork, they aren't just decorating an office lobby. They're utilizing the piece as an instrument of soft power. It becomes a bridge, a way to project cultural depth and universal themes across borders. It gives the painting an entirely different tier of institutional validation.
It is validated on a global diplomatic scale. And yet, in his personal private notes about this triumphant painting, Jairo Duque fiercely critiques it. He literally tears his own work apart.
He is incredibly candid about what he feels he got wrong.
Yeah.
He laments that he didn't abstract the horizon line more. He writes that he wishes he had blurred the line between the sea and the sky to create a greater sense of infinitude.
He also criticizes how he painted the pelican itself. He regrets painting so many individual, realistic feather details. He says he wishes he had used more economical, abstract gestures to make the bird feel more like a pure symbol and less like a literal bird.
He is really hard on himself.
So what does this all mean? Why expose these doubts to the world? Why not just take the win, smile at the diplomats in Los Angeles, and pretend you executed your vision flawlessly? Like, why publish the instruction manual of your own self-doubt?
Doing so completely dismantles a very toxic archetype in the art world. We have this pervasive myth of the untouchable genius.
Oh, totally.
We are taught to believe that great artists just conjure perfect art from thin air, that they never struggle, that their first instinct is always flawless. By exposing his struggle and his regrets, Duque proves that doubt isn't the enemy of art. Doubt is actually the fuel for artistic growth.
It humanizes the work entirely. Mm. Think about what a massive relief this is for art students who are sitting in their studios right now, just paralyzed by the fear that their work isn't perfect.
Yes.
Seeing a master critique a masterpiece gives them permission to struggle.
And from the perspective of the people buying the art, the collectors or the diplomats, it actually adds immense value to the piece. They aren't just buying a pretty picture of a bird to match their living room furniture.
Right.
They are acquiring a tangible, physical fragment of a living, breathing, intellectual debate.
They own the canvas where this artist wrestled with perfection and came to terms with his own humanity. It invites the viewer to be a participant in the ongoing dialogue rather than just a passive consumer of a pretty image.
And, you know, the philosophy we are unpacking here extends way beyond watercolor techniques or gallery walls.
It really does. Your Reduc painted the ocean, but the truth is, all of us listening are navigating a modern sea every single day. And our sea is incredibly turbulent.
It really is.
It is driven by stress, by relentless emails, by a constant barrage of push notifications and news alerts. We spend so much time frantic, trying to exert that dictatorial control over our lives, just like a bad artist trying to force the watercolor to behave.
And that excess of contemporary noise profoundly disconnects us from anything resembling a natural rhythm. Because we are so stressed, we tend to think that finding awe or peace requires some grand, expensive gesture.
Like a vacation.
Right. We think we need to travel to a faraway sanctuary in the Mediterranean to feel connected to something ancient.
But this painting, and Duke's entire process, serves as an urgent reminder that you don't need a plane ticket to experience awe. You just need to pause. You need to look with humility and pay meticulous, careful attention to the ordinary world right in front of you. A fry-stealing pelican on a local California beach can hold the silent, majestic wisdom of a primordial sea god if you just take the time to really look at it.
It's about setting up the conditions in your own life to let that controlled accident of beauty happen. When we demand flawless perfection from art or from ourselves, we miss the vulnerable, messy reality where the actual growth happens.
Wow. Yeah.
Perfection is a closed door. Vulnerability is an open window.
That leaves us with a lingering thought for you to take with you today. Something to mull over the next time you were rushing through your own frantic modern environment. We've seen how Gyro Duke found millennia of mythological memory in a fraction of a second on a local beach.
Yeah.
We've seen how he wrestled with the myth of Nereus, distorting the reflection on the water just enough to make it his own.
And the nature of myth is that it never stops evolving. It outlives the people who create it.
So ask yourself, if this painting survives another 1,000 years, much like the myth of Nereus did, how will future generations misinterpret or distort this very artwork?
That is a fascinating thought.
Right. Like when someone in the distant future looks at this specific pelican landing on a Southern California beach, what entirely new, unimaginable myths will they project onto it?